at the top. We do have a typo. That's in point two, so sorry about that. I meant to correct that with pen and ink and didn't. But point number one, courage. There are a lot of different definitions for it. People, you have poets and preachers and other people talking about it, giving different definitions and illustrations. But it's been generally defined as doing what needs done despite being fearful. I think that's a good basic definition when you hear about someone in the news. Well, he was so courageous. She was so courageous. If that person is interviewed, a lot of times they'll say, well, I wasn't feeling all that courageous. Something needed done, and I was willing to step forward. It was a split-second decision, and I just decided to step up and act. So it's not that I'm necessarily always brave or I'm always courageous, but in this case, I made this choice, and it turned out to be an act of courage. Number two, and I think this is where a lot of people are, courage is what most people want, but it's not always what we have. I think if you ask people, do you want to be courageous? Well, there might be a few folks who would say, no, I have no interest in that. But generally speaking, it's like some of the things in life. A person says, well, I'd like to lose some weight. But what's true? Yeah, trying to make that happen, that's where the difficult problem is. Or, you know, I'd like to work until I'm 85. Well, okay, but sometimes that doesn't work out too well. And the same thing is true with courage. A lot of people want it, but achieving it or showing it or having it, sometimes that's very, very difficult. Stan, you had a thought?
A question. I've always struggled with this idea of courage. We oftentimes say somebody did something that was a courageous act, but there's a difference, or at least there seems to me to be a difference between realizing, hey, I'm going to endanger myself, or I'm going to have a real problem here if I do it, and then go ahead and do it, as opposed to someone who just reacts. It seems that oftentimes what we call courage was just a simple reaction. Somebody sees a child darting out into traffic without even thinking about it. They don't even give a thought about their own life. They just react and they grab that. So sometimes am I wrong? Do we attribute courage sometimes when it really isn't courage?
Well, let's think about that for a second in terms of the latest shooting in Colorado. Remember the school shooting that wasn't too long ago? There were at least three young people who stepped forward, and I happened to see some of the interview that was especially focused on one of those younger men, a student, and his point was, everybody was saying, well, you're so brave and you're so courageous, and why did you choose that? And he said it was a split-second decision. So when it comes to courage, sometimes you have a chance to think about it for a while and you say, I'm going to do it. I thought about it. I've considered the pros and the cons, and I'm going to do it, even though there are definitely some pitfalls possibly associated with my choice. But then you have the other one that's a split second. In that split second, the mind can process things very, very quickly. So in that decision to act, I don't know that I would completely eliminate courage, because you do make the choice, am I going to flee or fight? As with these young men, they did fight. But if you want to look at that question from the perspective, are there different levels of courage, maybe? Well, we would say yes, that's certainly true. The guy that's willing to go out and do battle with a lion is certainly, I think in our estimation, going to be looked at as more courageous than the person who says, a car is coming from a quarter of a mile away and I'm going to dart across the street. Well, that may not be the most intelligent decision, but again, if you're going to run in front of a car that's coming, it's going to take a little bit of guts, or it's going to take, I don't necessarily like the word courage there, but the one is not equal to the other in terms of danger. And when we think about courageous situations, and sometimes that goes back. So there are a lot of different things that are wrapped in there when I think about courage. And as I said earlier, some of that goes back into you're giving careful consideration to it. But we do sometimes, just as with some other words, apply a certain word to a situation. It's like somebody says, well, I was scared. Well, they're scared and they're scared. There's courage and there's courage. Somebody says, I'm happy. It's the same thing. What does happy mean? Here's the person who says, well, nothing's really wrong in my life. Now I'm happy. And here's the other person who has just gotten someone who was in a terrible accident, they're going to live. And the person is happy in the sense of completely overjoyed. So we hear the word thrown around a lot. We use the word in many different ways, but sometimes the word is used inappropriately, or sometimes it's used in such a way where you have maybe a minimal amount of courage. Don, and then we can come back to you if you have another thought.
People I've heard has been the split second, like in shootings and things like that, that have survived. Basically, their comments were, I didn't go into that situation thinking I was going to die.
Yeah.
It was just a spontaneous reaction to helping somebody. And probably the people that died didn't think they were going to be killed.
Sure.
Now, I don't think if I had time to ponder, like Stan was talking about, and think about it, would I step into a situation knowing that I was going to die? I would hope it. Pray that I would if I'm saving somebody's life. I'm not sure I could. I'm sure my mind would take over and say, what, you sure you want to die?
Way back when, I had an interest in being a helicopter pilot. I was probably about 14, actually wrote the Air Force, got a hold of a general and asked him about helicopters, and like I say, it just never really worked out for me. But anyway, kind of recalling some of that information from many moons ago, I learned that in Vietnam, and I think this was a gross exaggeration, but they talked about how if you were a chopper pilot in Vietnam, you probably were not going to get past something like a dozen missions before you were either really shot up badly or you were shot down. So I don't know what the actual statistics were, but anyway, they were indicating at the time that the percentage was really high that you're going to have either a death or you're going to have some major casualty, or you're probably going to crash just because of the nature of that war. And I have to think about the people who were the chopper pilots during that time, and there have been some other cases. You might be in a jet, and you're flying over an area. You think about Iraq, for example, if you saw some of the footage where Iraq was just throwing up everything under the sun, trying to bring down planes, and you could see the tracers going up. And if you're flying into that kind of airspace, and they have just filled the air with rockets and bullets and everything that they can shoot up there, it's one thing to hear that from your commander, you've got to fly into that area. But if you do that, and you can avoid the shaking and quaking, or you can be the chopper pilot who says, there are people who have been hurt, and I'm going to go into that danger zone, I'm going to go into that hot zone, and I'm going to evac those guys out, or you're going to be someone who is like a Navy SEAL, and you know what you're signing up for? That you're going to be out there beating the bushes, and they're going to send you to foreign countries on a mission that nobody's going to talk about, and you're likely going to be under fire all those times. That's not just pre-planning. That's knowing in advance that you're going to come under live fire. And if you're not seriously injured, you very well could die. And yet, for the people who are willing to do that kind of thing, courage definitely comes to mind. So when I think about courage, as I say, there is sort of a sliding scale that we might give to it. There's this side, which says there is definite danger. There is danger in the sense that you might die. You've had a chance to think about that, and you still do it. On the other end, there are some things which we might say, well, that was certainly commendable for you. Courageous, not in the sense that we would have on the other end of the scale. Carol? One of the boys, I'm not sure if it was him or not, but he wanted to be an EMT. But again, it's kind of the same mindset, whether that was a boy or whether it was a different one. But EMTs, in my estimation, are courageous people. They have that desire to help people, just like that young man does. And you think about EMTs. I talked with Josh when he was here about his work as an EMT. And he said, we go into some dangerous places at times. I mean, you might have bullets flying. You think, this is Ghettoville. And this is really not an area, especially at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, where you want to be, because not everybody respects the people who are on the ambulance crew. So there's courage there with that job as well as some others. Gary?
I think especially in the split-second decision situations, that courage is part of your personality, who you've decided to be, and that's pre-planned. So when that moment happens, whatever your habit, your character is how you react. I mean, I would think that if you have time to think it out, you would still do the same thing. But so a habit of being courageous would cause you to do that.
Sure. Yeah, and the opposite would be true. If you're in the habit of always running, never standing up to anything, then you would expect that when that kind of circumstance arises, that's going to be your first tendency. Now, you may not do that, just like the courageous person who is generally courageous may not act in a courageous way. But still, you have those tendencies that you've developed, and oftentimes that will head people into a certain direction. Stan?
When the terrorists crashed airplanes into the World Trade Center, there was a third aircraft that was crashed in Pennsylvania. It's my understanding that passengers on board that plane actually discussed what they were going to do to keep that aircraft from crashing into something and killing a lot more people. In that situation, they knew they were going to die before they ever started. Mm-hmm. In other words, that plane's going to go down whether we do anything or not. And so then they took action. Is that courage?
Well, if it wasn't, I'm not sure how we would define the word. But there you are back to giving some thought. You're considering all the options. We have only one option. We're going to die. And are we going to die screaming and hollering, as we'll see from a biblical text here fairly soon, or are we going to die in a somewhat courageous manner? There was actually a book. The fellow who, as far as I remember the sequence of events, orchestrated that, said something to the effect, when it was time to go, let's roll. His wife, after that had all occurred, wrote a book. I don't know, I haven't read the book, but I believe that was the title of the book, Let's Roll. So he seems to have been a man of courage, kind of going back to what Gary was saying earlier. You have that general tendency, and sometimes you'll see that, maybe in a split-second decision. Sometimes you think about it for a little bit, but that's still where you come down at the end of the decision. Betty?
To me, I think going into the mission field needs courage. You have a couple of different situations there. You have maybe going to a place where they know everything will be okay, but it still takes courage to make that move to the other side of the world. And then you have the other situation where they're going into a place where it's not going to be friendly, and they know that.
Yeah.
To me, that takes a little bit of step-up in courage, maybe. But I think it takes courage for mission field work.
It does. The unknown frightens a lot of people. And thinking that you're going to pull up everything here that you know as far as life in the U.S., and even if it appears that everything is going to be ready for you in the host country where you're going to work, still it takes some courage to leave home. So you can look at this from a lot of different perspectives, and we gave, I think, some good illustrations, so that's going to wrap up points 3 and 4. Number 5, the Bible tells us that when it comes to courage, some fail. Well, life tells us that. Let's get a couple passages lined up here. The first one comes from 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel 17, 32. The other's going to come from Jeremiah 4 and verse 9. Who wants to? Okay, Carol, 1 Samuel 17, 32, Jeremiah 4 and verse 9. That'll be Julie. Carol, we're ready for you. Okay, now this is kind of a sad verse. You remember the story about David and Goliath? Well, it's in this chapter. Saul, what's his position at this time in Israel? King. And is he the, I lack courage or I lack fear? Okay, I lack courage. He was fearful. And yet you've got this shepherd boy David. He said what? Don't worry, King. You're fearful. All your soldiers are fearful, but here I am. The shepherd boy, I'll take him on. So sometimes it's not courage. Sometimes a person has overestimated their abilities, or sometimes they haven't thought things through. David, though, I would not say was in either of those categories. He had courage before God. That should be the basis of our courage. And he was willing to say to the king, I can take care of it. All right, Jeremiah chapter 4 and verse 9. Julie?
And it shall come to pass in that day, says the Lord, that the heart of the king shall perish, and the heart of the princess. The priests shall be astonished, and the prophets shall wonder.
Okay, here's the question. Thinking about 1 Samuel 17:32. Now as we look at Jeremiah 4 and verse 9, is 1 Samuel 17:32 the only time that we read about the heart of a king not being courageous? No. When you think about leaders, it's easy to assume that leaders are always courageous. You elect them to office, and you give them the power of the army, and you give them the power of the purse, and they have all these things at their disposal. The impression, I think, that some either have of leaders or leaders want people to have of them is that we are always courageous. We're always strong. You know, they stand out there in front of the TV cameras, and they wave their hands and, you know, shake their fist, and we're going to go get them, and we're going to conquer, and those kinds of things. When they get back to the office, so what do you think is true for some of those people? They're shaking in their boots. They call their advisors and say, do you think we can pull it off? I'm afraid. So as you look at the Bible, it tells us something about leaders. They are not always courageous, especially those that are not looking to God for help. All right, Ezekiel chapter 21, verse 7. Let's see how far, how widespread fear and a lack of courage can be. All right, Gary, we turn to you.
And it shall be when they say unto thee, wherefore sighest thou? That thou shalt answer for the tidings, because it cometh, and every heart shall melt, and all hands shall be feeble, and every spirit shall faint, and all knees shall be weak as water. Behold, it cometh, and shall be brought to pass, saith the Lord God.
Okay, when the Bible talks about the heart melting, what does that not mean? A melting heart.
Not good.
Well, all right. I think we can say that for sure. All right, a melting heart is not good. Can we add anything to that?
Fearful.
All right, it's a way of describing fear. It's a way of saying courageous. You think about the candy that melts. Well, people can have their courage, and it just kind of goes limp, and it just wilts inside them. And as you look at that verse that you read, verse 7, how many are described as having that kind of problem? All. Do you think the hearts of a group of people can all lack courage? They can. You can have that in the congregation. You can find that in different ways in the world. Or you can have, obviously, the opposite. You can have some people who are filled, they're brimming with confidence. All right, sticking with the Old Testament for a second. Isaiah, in chapter 13, verses 6 and 7, we've got another description for people who lack courage. Who's there and wants to take care of it for us? Isaiah 13, all right, back to you, Julie, 6 and 7.
Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will be limp. Every man's heart will melt.
Okay, 3 points there. Wail. When you think about someone who is not fearful, what do you find as far as what they're saying? Somebody who has confidence, what do you find?
Bold speech.
All right, there's bold speech. We can do it. We can take them. Just let us go. We're raring to go. When you find somebody who lacks courage, what do you find? Oh, man, we can't do that. It's never going to work in 100 years. They've tried it before. We're going to fail. We're going to be beaten up. We're going to be killed. Isaiah said that they were going to wail. And then what's the second point there? Read it again, Julie, if you would.
Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will be limp.
There we go. All hands are limp. What's that sound like? If a person has courage, what are you going to find? You know, strolls up to a person boldly and says, I want to shake your hand. What kind of handshake you get?
Strong.
No, you don't get a paralyzed handshake.
Strong.
Okay, if you're limp, you got ahead of me a bit, but that's okay. So you go up, a person is bold and confident. What kind of handshake you going to get?
Strong.
It's going to be strong. It's going to be firm. You're going to say, yeah, we're ready to go. But then Glenda's answer, what? If you lack courage, hello, good to meet you. You know, it's going to be that limp, it's going to be that weak, it's going to be that kind of handshake where you just think, is there any life in the body? And that's what Isaiah said, to describe a lack of courage. Do we see that today with people? Somebody says, come to the office. Hello, anybody there? You know, you see that kind of thing. So it's not new when we look at people. All right, courage is tested, and it may fail. Ezekiel chapter 2 and verse 6. Anybody there and want to read it? Carol.
And you, son of man, neither fear them nor fear their words, though thistles and thorns are with you, and you sit on scorpions, neither fear their words nor be dismayed at their presence, for they are a rebellious house.
Okay, thank you. you're going to deal with some people. You have to go see some people. Just imagine that God is giving you this information directly. And God says, first 2 points are like thistles and thorns. What's that tell you about the people you're going to see? All right, it's not going to be very fun. These are people who are going to want to poke you and stab you and hurt you and injure you in various ways. Well, if that's not enough, God goes on to say something else in that verse. He says, in addition to being like thistles and thorns, they're also like what?
Scorpions.
Now, suppose that you had a boss like that. Or suppose that there were other key people in your life that you had to deal with. And they were like thistles and thorns and scorpions. What would always be a challenge for you?
Facing
them. You're thinking it's hard to be courageous to go in and deal with those people on even a somewhat regular basis. But God said to his prophet, he said, this is what the people are like. I'm telling you that in advance. But God said, when you go deal with them, what? Don't be afraid. You be courageous. There's nothing to fear when it comes to these people. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at Proverbs? Gary?
When you're talking about all the heart shall melt, all the hands shall be faint, if the group perceives that they have a leader or someone that they look to, if that person's like that, the whole group could be like that.
Yeah.
But all it takes sometimes is one person to change the whole mood of the crowd to say, yeah, we can actually get this done. Or, no, we can't. Even if some people think they might, the leader says, I don't think so, then they can follow suit.
Yeah.
puts a pressure on us to be the right example.
A good example of that would be Pilate. Would you say that Pilate was courageous when he had Jesus? Excuse me, when he had Jesus before him? No. That crowd could smell fear. And what did that crowd do? They just bulldozed him down. Now, had Pilate been courageous, I don't know that the outcome would have been any different. I mean, the crowd could have rushed him, killed him. They could have complained to Rome. But it's also possible that had Pilate been courageous, that day could have gone much, much differently. And sometimes it's just a matter of one standing up and saying, no, this will not happen.
But on the other hand, when the Israelites were to go in and take the promised land, there was Joshua. I don't think anybody would argue that Joshua was not a strong man.
Let's just shut you down for a little bit. I've got it on the sheet. So we'll come back to that, but let's not head quite there yet. So, Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 1. Let's get there next. Brian, thank you.
The wicked flee when no one pursues.
All right. The wicked flee when what? Nobody's after them. Now, remember with Proverbs, just like raise your child in the way that he should go and, you know, he's never going to depart from it. Would you say that Proverbs 28 and verse 1 is always true? The wicked flee when nobody pursues. Is that always true? All right. Sometimes they are very bold. Sometimes they have courage. But generally speaking, when a person decides to be wicked, let's say that he's going to break in, or she, but we're going to use he to stay focused on the point here. Nobody's pursuing them, and yet they're still kind of always looking over the shoulder. Why is that? They're afraid. They're afraid. We see that often still true today. All right, 6. God's people are encouraged to be courageous. Let's start with some Old Testament references. Leviticus chapter 26, 6 to 8 is where we begin. All right, Lois, thank you.
I shall also grant peace to the land, so that you may lie down with no one making you tremble. I also shall eliminate harmful beasts from the land, and no sword will pass through your land. But you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. I will be able to chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fail before you by the sword.
Okay, basically 3 points here. Number one, when it comes to nighttime, do you find that there are some people, or think that there are some people who lack courage, they're afraid? Why are people afraid at night? Glenda? Okay. Security? Sure. Well, during the daytime, I mean, we're not so much concerned about people breaking in. Now, there are some home invasions, but during the daytime, not such a big deal. But night, once the old sun goes down, I mean, you never know who may be creeping there in the backyard. And sometimes if you're by yourself, nobody else is there, you can say, I'm just less secure here in the evening by myself. I don't feel nearly as courageous as I do during the daytime. What else?
You can't see what's coming out of the dark.
All right. You might have somebody else that their eyes have adjusted, especially if you've been in the light, and you just can't see what somebody else may see. So there's that. Anything else? Well, he talked about lying down and no trembling. People sometimes will be concerned, did I lock the door? I wondered last night, actually got out of bed. I thought, I think I closed the garage door, but I'm going to get up and check. So maybe you've done that a few times to get up and make sure that the garage door is locked or down or whatever that might be. But God said, you can lie down and you're not going to have to be afraid. Be courageous. And then he said, when it comes to the wild beasts, you think there are any people who are concerned about wild beasts? Fearful? I don't want to go out there in the woods. I have no idea what's out there. Or you find sometimes people, they'll be in an area of the country where they have bears or some other critters or maybe poisonous snakes. They don't want to go out there. They don't want to be tramping through the woods. Even high grass sometimes. People just say, I know that there are snakes in there. Those kinds of things. And then God said to give his people courage, he said, 5 of you are going to be able to chase how many? 100. And if you have 100, how many are they going to be able to take care of? 10,000. Well, if God says, this is what I'm going to do for you, be faithful to me, what would that inspire you to have?
Courage.
I mean, if God's going to let me lie down, I don't have to lock the door at night and be concerned about terrible beasts and my enemies are going to fall before me, that is a pretty good arrangement. But God was trying to incentivize his people to have courage. All right, then we have Deuteronomy chapter 31, 6 and 7. Gary?
Be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him in the sight of all Israel, Be strong and of good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto thy fathers, unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it.
Okay, I'm just going to give you the top three there, but you could count probably at least six or so incentives there to be courageous. God said, number one, be strong. Number two, be courageous. Number three, don't be afraid. He comes back to that again and again and again. He says, I've got it handled. I've got you covered. There's no reason to be concerned. Do you think people today, often Christians, still need that message? Be courageous. God says, I know what your needs are. I've got the ability to handle them. Let me take care of it. Don't sweat those problems. All right, we mentioned courage and obedience, and that brings us to 1 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 13. Last Old Testament reference now. All right, Julie?
Then you will prosper if you take care to fulfill the statutes and judgments with which the Lord charged Moses concerning Israel. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be dismayed.
Okay, fulfill the statutes. If you're willing to do that, don't be afraid. Be courageous. Be confident. It is another reminder that I will take care of you. Then we have in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 38 and 39, this idea of shrinking back. And that goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Here's the person that needs to go somewhere, needs to see someone, and there's that reluctance. There is that, well, I'll just kind of knock lightly on the door and hopefully he won't hear me, and I can go back home because he didn't answer the door. Hebrews 10, 38 and 39. Who's got it and wants to go? All right. Glenda? Now imagine if you had, thank you, I'm sorry. Imagine that if you'd been a Jew, you become a Christian. And for a while, everything seems great. But then there's this persecution that begins to arise. Your friends, fellow Jews that have that same background as you do, and then the officials. You start seeing God's people locked up. You start seeing God's people beaten. Their properties confiscated. Cut off from the temple. What would that do to you as far as a Christian? Put some pressure on you, doesn't it? You're going to lose all your friends. You're going to risk losing your job? You're going to risk being ostracized by society? You're going to risk going to jail? Are you really going to stick with it? What's the temptation? The temptation is to say, well, I was committed to Christ, but now there are all these concerns about here, out here about my life. I'm being persecuted, so there's a temptation to pull back, shrink back. God's going to understand, right? No. What's God say? Don't do it. Be courageous. I stood by my people in Old Testament times, and I will stand by you. Well, let's pick up with that thought to a little greater degree. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 28. All right, Glenda, have a question or you want to read? Okay, Philippians 1, 28. Was that Philippians 1:28? Okay. That wasn't quite what I was thinking. Let's try 20. That's Philippians 1, verse 28. Yeah, Philippians 1. Yeah, that's what I've got as well.
Yeah, New King James Version has adversaries.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to have to see why the text varies so differently. In Philippians 1:28 and some others, the ESV and others, it says, and in nothing by the adversaries, which is for them, and in nothing affrighted by the adversaries, which is for them an evident token of perdition. So that was a point that I was trying to be bringing out here. In nothing, not one thing, be affrighted by adversaries. Well, oh, okay.
It just says in no way alarmed by your opponents.
Okay, I guess.
Of destruction for them.
Okay.
Of salvation for you, and that too from God.
All right, I guess I focus more on the last than the first. So sorry about that confusion, but that was the right reference. All right, Paul gave a reason for that in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. You may remember that passage. He said, for God gave us not what? A spirit of? All right, and not a spirit of fear. In contrast to that, what do we have? But
power,
love,
sound mind.
All right, and sound mind. God has given us the very opposite of that. Don't go back and be like people in the world. All right, we have some examples of courage when it comes to the Bible. Let's get a couple of these lined up quickly. Numbers 13, 30 and 31, and then over in Judges chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Numbers 13, 30 and 31. Julie?
Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.
Okay, Stan, this brings us back to where you were just a little bit ago. The land had been surveyed. You've got two faithful servants of God that says, look, he's given us a land. It's great land. Let's go. Let's take it. We know what God has promised, and it's going to be something to see, but we can do it. And then you've got the majority saying, we can't do it. It's impossible. We're like grasshoppers in the sight. That's a very bad idea. And today, that same kind of thing still happens. When you have somebody who is courageous, do you usually have detractors? People who say, you can't do that. Don't try that. It's going to be bad news. You're going to fail. They just go on and on and on, and sometimes all the discouragement works. Even in the church, they just say, well, you know, we don't have enough, or we've never been this or that or the other thing, and it's never going to work. Well, you don't want to be foolish, but with God's help, people can do a lot more than what we would expect to happen on our own. Stan, do you have a follow-up thought there?
No.
Okay, so that's an excellent Old Testament illustration, so I wanted to make sure that we included that one. Okay, let's pick up after that reference, one more Old Testament reference from Judges chapter 8. Four, rather, verses 8 and 9. This is Deborah, one of the judges. Carol?
Then Barak said to her, if you will go with me, then I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. And she said, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on the journey that you are about to take. For the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to
Okay, this is one of the passages in the Bible that always makes you smile a little bit. Here's this guy, he says, well, now wait a minute. I'll go, but I'll go what? You come with me. Let's get the lady on board. And, yeah, you go first. I'll stand behind you. If you go, I can go. I've got courage then.
Mm-hmm. The priest, the word, the prophet, he thought if he took her, then he'd be more likely God would really be with him.
Mm-hmm. Today, I think you have the same kind of thing. Well, I'll go with the preacher, or I'll go with somebody who's religious, but you go first. That same kind of idea. Well, it's good that people are willing to go, but ideally we can bring them up to the point where they don't feel like they have to necessarily be the one who's always following. But courage can be a problem, and this is a great passage, as is the next one, Esther chapter 4 and verse 16, to show that it's not just men who have courage. You can find sometimes courageous children, can't you? That should be one of the values that we try, one of the characteristics that we try to install in our kids, courage, to do what's right. Women can be courageous, sometimes even more so than men. And certainly men should fall into that category. Gary?
Are you ready to
read? Oh, okay.
Sorry, I was calling
you to read. Okay, Esther
4:16, great. Okay. Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also, with my and my maidens, will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish.
All right, now here's this lady, she says, I'm thinking about going into the king. I'm willing to do that. But she said, if I do that, it is not according to the law. This is something that you just don't do. You just don't walk in. Today, we might not get killed if we walk in on the president. I mean, the Secret Service would probably tackle you if you could get that far. But they're not going to permit that. You go in unannounced to some of the ancient kings, and that could be a death sentence. And she makes the point, if I perish? All right, had she thought about this in advance? But even though there was that possible death consequence, what was her attitude? This needs done. And I'm in a position to do it. And I'm willing to do it. Well, if you want a good example, and Stan, this takes us back to your sliding scale of courage, so to speak. I'm going to put her towards the high end of that, because she had weighed the cost and she said this could be a deadly action, but this really needs to be done for my people. So I'm going to act. And she's a great example. Well, I think you also have to, because if it didn't go well for her, he was also going to be in the hook. I mean, the king would kind of backtrack that and kind of figure out, well, where'd this come from? Who have you discussed this with? Well, and you start going back and you find the quote-unquote conspirators, and it could have gone very badly. Death for him as well.
If they didn't do anything, they were going to die.
Sure.
If they did something and they died, well, they were going to die anyway.
Yeah.
So.
But would you say that there's some people who die a coward's death? I mean, they know that they're going to die one way or the other, kind of like the airplane. And you make the choice. Are we going to die huddled in the seat, in this case of the airplane, or are we going to die a courageous death and possibly save the lives of others? Now, what causes people to choose A over B? I may not be familiar with all the psychology between the two, but I do believe that at least a big factor there is what Gary pointed out earlier. And that is, you have taught yourself or developed some characteristics, or this is sort of at the core of who you are to make those kinds of choices. And in this case, she was of that mindset. Don?
Don't you believe, though, that given the time to consider that two choices, not to act or act, like the plane that went down to Pennsylvania, that most people, we don't know how many people on that plane were involved in or saying yeah, or some of them said no, we don't want to do it. We don't want to die a passive death as best possible. I think given that you're going to die anyway, no question about it, most people would take an action to prevent a further death down the road. The same as people that charge a gunman and somebody of mass shootings, save other people's lives.
You wonder. I mean, until you're in some of those circumstances, it's difficult to maybe know some things. But I have to wonder, going back to the illustration that she gave as far as some of the mass shootings, think about some of the church shootings. you have people who have essentially hit under the pews as the guy is going row to row, and they didn't even throw a songbook at the guy. Now, did they know that they were going to die? Maybe not. But as they hear gunshots going off, did they have a pretty good inkling that at least some people were going to die? Yes. Now, why didn't they fight back? I have no idea. Maybe it was just sheer terror. The panic of the situation caused them to react in that way. Maybe there were some people who thought, if I just cower, hopefully he's going to run out of bullets or leave. And that was their strategy. But you do, and you do find some other people who have decided to fight back when there's been a shooting.
In the war at night, you heard soldiers falling on grenades to save their buddies.
Yeah.
Now, that's a split second.
It is.
But at least he thought, if I can give my life, I'm saving several other lives.
Yeah, but not everybody's made that choice.
No.
There have been some of the people who would just say, well, you're going to get blown up. I feel badly about that, but not me. So there are huge differences between people. Julie, or?
Well, I was just going to say, when you asked the white question, people don't know how they're going to act, and they could go into shock or not be able to move just from terror.
Yeah. Stan?
How much does this figure into it? Looking at 1 John chapter 4, verse 18, there's no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. Back to Gary's thought about personality and how it figures into it. Does this figure into that? If a person has been brought up in God's knowledge and brought up to believe that the Lord's going to look after him and take care of him no matter what, are they a lot more likely to be courageous?
Well, I think so, because when you think about, and I didn't include a reference from Hebrews 13 about verses 5 and 6, but when you think about the Christian, if you have been able to really put your trust in God, the Hebrew writer says, what am I going to fear as far as what man is going to do to me? You can imprison me, you can beat me, you could cut off my fingers. I mean, it really doesn't matter. None of that stuff is going to be pleasant. But I know where I'm going, I know who I am, and there is nothing that you can do to me that makes me afraid. John the Baptist, I think, would fall into that category. Jesus asked in Luke chapter 7, who'd you go out to see? It's not like John was flip-flopping in the wind. You know, today he's here and over there he's here. He was willing to call out the adultery with Herod, and he was willing to tell people, repent, the axe is at the root of the trees, you're going to be hewn down, cast into the fire, Jesus is coming and he's going to be your judge. I mean, he and the Old Testament prophets, they were fiery people because they had that complete confidence in God. And they were courageous. Now, does that mean that their stomach never got a little queasy? I'm not sure that you can make that point, even with Jesus as far as his humanity. I think that even he had that, you talk about Jesus' struggles, even he must have felt that challenge from time to time, and yet he was able to always choose courage over fear. But it is a common thing that people struggle with.